honest man.
Let me bring you love from the fields, poppies red and roses filled with summer rain, to heal the wounds and still the pain that threatens again and again, as you drag down every lover's lane.
Life's long celebrations here, I'll coast you all in.
Let me bring you all things revised, galley hides, lips on served in chilling ale, greetings from a fellow hail. I am the wind to fill your sail, I am the frost to take your nail,
a singer of these ageless times, with kitchen frozen gutter rhyme.
Testing, 1, 2, test. Testing, 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 testing. Testing, 1, 2, test. Test, 1, 2, test.
As you drag down every lover's lane,
life's long celebrations here, I toast you all in any
Thank you. Professor James. I had a friend one time, at least I thought I did. He come to me, said, "Johnny," said, "What, man? Am I dull?" I said, "Yeah. I'm taking this cat in, get him a place to stay, and I found now he's going around town telling everybody that he got my wife." Then I get mad. I go to the cat like a good guy should. I said, "Look, man, I'm gonna warn you just one time. Next time I warn you, I'm gonna use my gun, 'cause I'm mad. I'm bad, like Jesse James. So man, I'm so man, I'm gonna run you this morning. I got three boys, do my dirty way. Now you don't see me, I'm the big boss. I do the pain all. I'm happy to take care of you in the own way. They may shoot you, they may cut you.
Testing, 1, 2, test.
They may drown.
Testing,
you.
1, 2, test. Testing, testing.
I just don't know. I don't care. The longer they take care of you. So mad, I'm bad this morning, like Jesse James. You gonna take your rat down by the riverside. Now four is going down, ain't but three coming back. You read between lines. Have a deal, 'cause I'm mad. I'm bad, like Jesse James. They're gonna tie your hands, they're gonna tie your feet, they're gonna gag your throat. Well, you can't holler on. And trying won't help you none. They'll sink you in the water. The other bubbles coming up.
Jeff, thanks very much, everyone, for coming. Thank you, good night.
Prepare yourselves and we'll see you soon, and thank you so much.
Recognize that there are ties between us, all men and women living on the earth. Ties of hope and love, a sister and brotherhood. That we are bound together in our desire to see the world become a place in which our children can grow free and strong. We are bound together by the task that stands before us and the road that lies ahead. We are bound and we are bound. There is a feeling like the clenching of a fist. There is a hunger in the center of the chest. There is a passage through the darkness and the abyss. And though the body sleeps, the heart will never rest.
Shed a little light, oh Lord.
Let that light, oh Lord,
so that we can see.
There's a passage through the darkness and the mist. And though the body sleeps, the heart will never rest.
Oh, let us turn our thoughts today to Martin Luther King.
And recognize that there are ties between us, all men and women. Ties of hope and love, of sister and
the reason that you had to care.
Bruce Birch will be up with All Things Reconsidered in about 3 minutes. Stay tuned. Hi, this is Bruce Birch, and you are on the air. We are on the air with All Things Reconsidered. This is our 23rd show, and just would like to relate to you that I'm glad that you're here. We're coming up to the top of the hour, it's 7 minutes after the hour, and this is All Things Reconsidered. Happy New Year. This is Bruce Birch, and again, I'd like to welcome you to All Things Reconsidered, the weekly radio program that brings you a different perspective, perhaps, on the day's events and on the week's events. Tonight, we're going to have an interview with Mark Rudd, the second part of that interview. And along with that, later on, we're going to do a call-in segment. Peter Werby is not playing tonight, is not doing his show tonight, so, and he doesn't play when he does his show, but tonight he's off the air, so we're going to go until 1 a.m. New Year's extravaganza, if you will, for All Things Reconsidered. I'm really grateful that you're here aboard with us tonight. So sit back and relax and buckle up and settle in and get ready for another All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. Again, I'd like to welcome you to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch, and I am your host for the evening, as I am each and every Sunday night at this time of the day. One of the first things that I'd like to do, though, is welcome you and wish you a happy new year. And we have rolled over into another year. And, you know, I got to tell you, I'm really excited about this. And the reason why I'm really excited about this is because I believe this may be the year of indictments. This may be the year of impeachments. This may be the year that we see a serious shakeup in our government. You know, I'm sure somebody was saying this last year at this time, too. I'm relatively positive. But, I am. I'm absolutely, absolutely convinced that we're going to see some serious stuff happen this year. And hopefully it won't be me going to Guantanamo. Or you, for that matter, if you're listening to this program. What a fun-filled show we've got tonight, or at least a content-filled show. I was actually on the air this past Friday night. Mike Malloy he had done Randy's show in the afternoon, and I came into the Tom Hartman chat room. And if you're not in the Tom Hartman chat room right now, you probably should be, because that is where erudition exists. That's where intelligentsia hang out. Okay. That's the place where people get together to talk about stuff that is amazing, that will blow your freaking mind. Anyway, I popped into the Tom Hartman chat room, and you can get there by going to tomhartman2ns.com, tomhartman.com. Click on the live chat. That'll shoot you right into that room. But so I popped into Tom Hartman chat room Friday afternoon, I don't know, 5:30, 6 o'clock, something like that. And walked right into a conversation where some people were saying, not again, Mike's going to be a repeat tonight, blah, blah, blah. So I was asked, actually, if I would do a live show, and I did it Friday night. 3-hour show from 10 to 1 a.m., and we took several phone calls and talked about the new year and the end of the year and all that good stuff. And tonight, though, I want to kind of look ahead. And tonight's show, I really would like to try to focus on what you would like to see. What's your vision for this year? You know, so give that some thinking. If you would like to, be a part of the program, you very much can. Actually, the first hour of the show or so, I'm going to do some commentary and also play the second half of the Mark Rudd interview that I did back before Christmas. And Mark is really an amazing guy, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on too. But anyway, in this interview, we talked about a lot about what activism is, and also we talked about one of the movements that's actually in place right now doing some work around the nation called World Can't Wait. But we'll get to that later. But in the second and third hour of the program, what we'll do is we'll take phone calls and we'll put you on the air. You want to talk about something? Please do so. You can go to our webpage at allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org. Click on Show Preview, and that'll shoot you right into a page that has our telephone number that you can dial in with, and also an email address if you'd like to share your comments via email. I check email about, 4 or 5 times every 20 seconds. So, not that often, but pretty often. And if you do that, you can send your comments that way. The telephone number to call into the program, which I will give you later, and also I'll give it to you right now if you want to jot it down for later, is 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. Very, very grateful to have you aboard for tonight. If this is the first time you've ever listened to this program, stick around. You may enjoy it, or you may not. Either way, I'm glad you're here on this fine New Year's night. The first story that I wanted to get into this evening has to do with our fantastic friend. He's not really a friend, but he is a guy who actually comes up with some really interesting stories. And I don't know really, but I want to mention this. I can't verify the veracity of this. I can't really speak to how true this might be, this particular story. But it is out of the Capitol Hill Blue, and the Capitol Hill Blue is kind of like, best I can tell, it's kind of like the newspaper for Congress that is it's like a tabloid kind of thing for Congress. But Doug Thompson apparently was a staffer there on Capitol Hill for a long time and knows a lot of people who know a lot of people who know a lot of people. And he has a lot of interesting stories on there, you know. So so I'm going to repeat this story. This is kind of an interesting one. This is from the 29th, and this is written by Doug Thompson, the Capitol Hill Blue. He writes, "Good soldiers follow orders, and hundreds of American military men and women return to the United States on holiday leave this month with orders to sell the Iraq War to a skeptical public. The program, coordinated through a Pentagon operation dubbed Operation Homefront, ordered military personnel to give interviews to their hometown newspapers, television stations, and other media outlets and praise the American war effort in Iraq. Captain David Diaz, who was a military reservist, told his hometown paper, 'We've learned as a military how to do this better. My worry is that we have the right military strategy and political strategies now, but the patience of the American public is wearing thin.'" Now, the question is, did Diaz return to the U.S. on emergency leave with an agenda to offer a positive spin that would help counter growing concerns among Americans about the U.S. exit strategy? How much do we know? How do we know that it's not his strategy, especially after he discloses that superior officers encouraged him to talk about his experiences in Iraq? Diaz replies, "You don't. I can tell you that the direction we've gotten from on high is that there is a concern about public opinion out there, and they want to set the record straight." Okay. Set the record straight. And you know, what does that mean? In other words, we got to catapult the propaganda. We got to catapult the propaganda. One more time, we see evidence of the fact that our president, who is pretty much woefully a moron, you know, is telling, you know, the military, this is what you got to do. You know, so.
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Yep, got to kind of catapult the propaganda there. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, that's one of many, many stories. Here's some of the things that here's their set of talking points. You know, we got talking points for everyone. There's talking points for probably even talking points for ministers to talk about religion. But here's their talking points. The talking points for the guys coming home from the war. Number one, you need to admit that initial doubts about the war, but claim conversion to a belief in the American mission. Number two, praise military leadership in Iraq and throw in a few words of support for the Bush administration. What was that, George?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in, to kind of catapult the propaganda.
Okay, claim the mission to turn security of the country over to the Iraqis is working. Reiterate that America must not abandon its mission and must stay until the job is finished. I'd like to know who's going to measure that. Talk about how things are better now in Iraq. But soldiers who are home and don't have to return to Iraq tell a different story. Sergeant Major Floyd DuBose of Jackson, Mississippi, who returned home after 11 months in Iraq with the Mississippi Army National Guard's 155th Combat Brigade, says, "I've just been focused on trying to get the rest of these guys home." Specialist Leonard Clark, a National Guardsman, was demoted to private and fined $1,640 for posting anti-war statements on an internet blog. Clark wrote entries describing the country's commander as a glory seeker and the battalion sergeant major an inhuman monster. His last entry before the blog was shut down told how his fellow soldiers were becoming increasingly opposed to the U.S. operation in Iraq. "The message is clear," says one reservist. "If you want to get out of this man's army with an honorable discharge and full benefits, you better not tell the truth about what is happening in country." Well, you know, it looks like to me that the military, that military intelligence may just be, not a misnomer. You know, it may very well be that there's folks there in the military who are absolutely telling the truth and who are seeing reality and who are understanding that this war is a complete debacle from day one. You know, so I would say don't lose faith. Now, you know, one thing that happened during Vietnam that I've heard, I'm only 36 years old. And if you're from the NSA, call me at 336-856-2855 and you will get to the front of the line. I'll even tell you my social security number. But I'm not old enough to remember much of Vietnam except for the very tail end of it, and I was just a little kid. However, having read stories and talked with a lot of people who were around during the conflict, and actually some who served in the Army during the conflict, you know, tell stories about some of the subversive activities that those who were in the Army took, you know, to try to thwart their commanding officers, you know, like going out on patrol and going around the corner and going and taking a nap in the bushes, stuff like that. There was a couple of newspapers. There's an interview that I did with Peter Werby about, I want to say, a month and a half, 2 months ago, in which Peter was talking about the fact that there were competing newspapers on battleships, competing anti-war counterculture newspapers actually being run and produced on the battleships themselves out in the ocean during Vietnam. So, you know, so never let it be said that military itself, you know, can't have a role within the anti-war movement. I think it can, especially those who are in the military themselves. I mean, they may not, you know, they're there, but they may not believe in the cause that's being pushed, the propaganda, if you will. It's 21 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Bruce Burch on All Things Reconsidered. If you this is your first time that you've ever heard this show, we're glad to have you aboard. And what we're going to do real quick is take a very quick break, and we'll be back here shortly. And we're going to go ahead and do the interview with Mark Rudd after this break.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. It sure is hard to get an accurate picture of what's really going on in Iraq by watching the nightly news. On CBS the other night, I saw a report by its correspondent in Baghdad about the post-election turmoil there. Sunnis were protesting the election results, we were told, because they didn't like the fact that the Shiites and Kurds were winning. Then the screen showed a picture of Muqtada al-Sadr, the Shiite firebrand, as if he stands for all Shiites, and as if the power struggle is simply Sunni versus Shiite. CBS didn't even identify the picture, by the way. Didn't even tell us it was Muqtada al-Sadr, much less tell us that Sadr is a militant Shiite fundamentalist who has clashed repeatedly with other Shiite groups. Nor did it tell us that Sadr wants the U.S. out of Iraq right away. Instead, John Roberts, the anchor-in-waiting, dumbed down the whole story to a simple Shiite versus Sunni dispute. He asked the correspondent whether there was any attempt to negotiate with the Sunni parties and then said, "Sounds like the Iraqi equivalent of our old smoke-filled rooms." Well, not exactly, John. This isn't Tammany Hall. This is a country on the verge of breakup. The prospects for all-out civil war seem to be coming ever closer to reality, and CBS News is not serving us well by pretending otherwise. I'm Matt Rothschild. And that's how I see it.
You're listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no Oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
You're back with Bruce Birch on All Things Reconsidered, and glad to have you back with us. If this is the first time you've been on this radio program, I'd just like to let you know a little bit about me, actually, because, you know, hey, I'm the host. First of all, let's do the rundown of all the announcements that I need to make. And the first one is that you can come and you can chat with us. If you're here in this program, you're not in the Tom Hartman chat room, please do come and join us, because you know, the guys in there, they discuss the show, and it's really, really intelligent people there. Now, the second announcement is that this show is archived by White Rose Society. Ben Birch, who does that, you can find that website at whiterosesociety.org. Fantastic service. Over 5 million hours of liberal talk show stuff there to go and check it out. So please do. Third announcement is that you know, as you heard during the break, one of the most supportive radio hosts I've ever encountered, my friend Bob Kincaid, does a show every weeknight from 7 to 10. Except for he's not going to do one tomorrow night. He's apparently going to be huddled up on the couch watching West Virginia play football. Hopefully, they'll, you know, we'll all say a prayer that they win, so Bob can be in a good mood Tuesday night. but please do check out Bob Kincaid's show. He's out of West Virginia, and just, you know, really fantastic progressive radio program for you to check him out. And check out Tom Hartman during the day. Tom does a show from 12 to 3 every day, and you can get to his show by going to TomHartman.com, and all the information is right there on his home page. Going back to real briefly before we go ahead and go into this interview, let you know a little bit about me. I started this program back in July and August of this year, or last year. Wow, already another year. Last year, and you know, what I did was I said, you know, this would be a really cool program to put together, to have people on who are, you know, just regular, ordinary folks. And we've been trying to do that. Every so often, though, I will pepper the interviews that I do with someone who has been a fairly famous name, you know, and in that vein, I've interviewed several people who are fairly well known within activist communities. Sansara Taylor from World Can't Wait, Peter Werby, who does the program Night Call and also subs for Mike Malloy. Also interviewed, now I'm drawing a blank. Anyway, done a number of good programs with fairly interesting interviews. And I also interview folks from off the street, not off the street, but, people that I know who have things to share. And some of those people, such as my friend Peter or Geronimo or, any number of folks that have been on this program and have been a wonderful contributor to All Things Reconsidered, just as a closing thank you from last year, thank you for joining the program. I broadcast this directly from Greensboro, North Carolina. And, so if you are interested in, I don't know why I'm even saying that you're interested, but that's just, there's a little tidbit of information for you. So you'll be calling Greensboro. It'll be on your phone bill later if you call into the show. We're going to go right ahead over to this interview, the second part of the interview with Mark Rudd. Now, Mark was the National Secretary of Students for a Democratic Society. I'm being reminded in the chat room by Latourge that Tom also does a local show, which he absolutely does. Tom does a local. He actually does 6 hours of radio a day, local show that is streamed via 620kpoj.com, and then the national show, which is streamed via White Rose Society and Air America. But you can, if you go to Tom's website, it'll tell you all about all the radio stuff he does. There are times he does 9 hours of radio a day. And as he says, it's probably easier than laying bricks for a living. So, but Tom is just a fantastic guy. Anyway, back to Mark Rudd. Mark is the National Secretary of SDS in 1969, and just to give you a little bit of background, he got involved in SDS in 65 at Columbia University in New York, and led a very successful demonstration there. Also, in our last interview, which you can download off of the internet on my website, go to the archives page, he talks about the first time he got arrested, which was a mobilization or an action against the fact that Dean Rusk, who was the Secretary of State under LBJ, was in New York at the Council on Foreign Relations, and they actually picketed the event, and he got into trouble over it, got arrested. But that was sort of like the beginning of his activist activities. And in the interview that we did and split up over the 2 weeks, he talks about activism, talks about what it means, what he believes it means to be an activist. Without any further ado, let's go ahead and let's see here if I can pull up the correct version of this. Of this file. This is Mark Rudd, and this is Bruce Birch interviewing Mark Rudd, and for All Things Reconsidered. I can relate somewhat to that just from my own personal experiences. When the Weathermen made the leap.
Well, wait a minute. What was your personal experience?
Well, just not particularly in the 60s, but of late in some of the demonstrations that I've been involved in personally.
Be more explicit.
I'm sorry?
More details.
I've been to a number of anti-war demonstrations locally. I went to the one in Washington in September. Just some smaller stuff locally and a couple of larger things, but not ever anything in my mind that even remotely approaches some of the things the Weathermen did.
I don't think it would be appropriate. And in retrospect, I don't think it was so productive what we did, but it absolutely would not be productive. But what interested me was you're saying that you felt the same way.
Well, I'm involved in a chapter locally of World Can't Wait. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
It sponsored a
National Walkout Day.
Day of Action, November 2nd. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. But there's some kind of crazy relationship to Bob Avakian.
Yeah, there is.
Like a front for the Revolutionary Communist Party.
Well,
or something
like that. And it's interesting that we brought that up. I think that there are a number of people who are involved who are RCP, who are Revolutionary Communist Party members. Myself, I'm not myself.
Marxism and Communist Revolution is a wonderful religion. you know, and you sound like, you know, you're like myself, a utopian, in the sense that you believe that we can create such a beautiful society in which there'll be equality and justice and end to war, and we can do it out of our rational ideas. I'm not so sure myself, and the history of communism has not been that great. I've become somewhat of an anti-communist. Also, I had some dealings with Bob Avakian years ago, and
really?
I thought he, well, I don't want to go into it, but I wouldn't follow Bob Avakian around the corner.
Well, that's one way to put it.
Sound like you're into it, and that's cool.
Well, I'm not necessarily into the RCP. I just, the world can't wait thing about driving George Bush from office, to me, I'm very much into that. Now, what happens after that? You know, we have a constitution. That
sounds like a useful kind of activity. Driving, you know, do you find in your organizing work that you actually can grow your numbers and can involve more people in this, or are you isolated?
Well, we are growing. I mean, we're actually and with each crime that he commits that comes to light, more people, you know, show up. And so, you know, I when I first got involved, we had maybe five or six core members, and now we're up to probably about, I don't know, 15 or 20, something like that.
Very active people?
Yeah, oh, very, very active, yes.
That's great.
So
15 or 20 people can do a lot, and they can get to a lot more people.
Well, that's, you know, when I was watching the Weather Underground movie, I couldn't help but see correlations between the World Can't Wait movement, if you want, and it kind of is a movement, to what you guys were doing then, and just with the sort of, I don't want to say allegiance to the movement itself, but there is a certain, you know, it's sort of an open-ended goal, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, it is somewhat elitist. It's the idea that some people will be a vanguard. They'll go before the others, and they'll show other people the way.
Yeah.
That's a basic communist notion. You know, the Communist Party is the vanguard, and even the front organizations like World Can't Wait, eventually, I mean, they justify themselves in that they're a vanguard too,
mm-hmm.
and the people will follow. I'm not so sure that works that well, but it is a theory.
Well, you know, not my own questions about the whole World Can't Wait thing, you know, there's, you know, who knows where it will end up, but at this point, you know, it still seems to be growing, so.
There's a thing about communism. It's a very elitist kind of a notion that the intellectuals, I mean, people adopt, like, working-class style, you know, like Bob Avakian wears a leather jacket and a worker's cap from the 20s. You know?
Right.
But basically, it's intellectuals who are educated, mostly from the middle class, who get ideas, and sometimes the ideas are cool ideas, you know, but then they somehow believe. The problem with communism is that you believe your own ideas are real, and the basis for which is that you have the ideas. It's classic idealism, and I'm personally anti-ideological. You know, I'm very practical. Does it work? You know, what helps build a progressive majority movement in this country? I don't have the answer, but I'm pretty sure the communist organization is not it. It hasn't proven to be anything other than murderous around the world.
That's very true.
I asked Bob Avakian about Comrade Stalin.
Well,
back to the old stuff. I think it's kind of like
if I ever get to do an interview with him, that you, it's on my list.
The vacuum?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear it. You know? Yeah.
If I ever get to, that question will be on my list.
Yeah. Ask about the inevitability of how a commandist party. You know, the reality is not only the working class mobilized. You know, reality is a hell of a lot more than that. It's much messier. And because it's messier, you get to situations where the utopia you're going to build has got to be imposed on the goddamn people who aren't smart enough or are backward enough that they don't realize what's good for them.
Hmm.
That's the history of communism.
Right.
A sad history. And anybody who's still going around in this country talking about communism is either a utopian or a fool. And I think that the, you know, I mean, I love the idea of driving George Bush from office. That would be great, you know. But to cite a guy calling himself a communist as kind of an authority in this, I've checked out the website. You know, Chairman Bob Avakian says this. I mean, that's suicidal.
Yeah.
No American is gonna join a communist movement. There's no communism in the world. It all got defeated. So give it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I'd say to Bob Avakian.
Okay.
It's well, funny. I was drinking with Bob Avakian once. I won't tell the story now. I'll tell the story some other time.
Okay. Well,
I'm sorry. I'm a terrible anti-communist. You know, it's like we're talking about some old religion, you know, that's defunct. But there's a few, you know.
Well, I just want to, I mean, before we get to, you know, because we're actually getting up hard to a hard break. You know, I know that you went underground.
Yeah.
And you were out of sight for about 7 years, right?
7.5 years.
7.5 years. You watched the Nixon resignation. You watched the end of the Vietnam War, basically from hiding.
Yeah.
What was that like to be in hiding and for a guy who was pretty much out front a lot of the time?
Oh, it was terrible. I realized it was a bad decision about a month, within a 2 months of my going underground. I realized that the strategy wasn't going to work, and that personally for me it was a terrible way to live. You know, but I thought it's complicated, and it's a complicated, you know, emotional and psychological question. What do you do? You know, I couldn't turn myself in. If I turned myself in at the time, I'd not only be facing a big trial and possible prison terms, but also it would be seen as a defeat and a victory for the government. I didn't want to do that. So I spent 7.5 years, mostly my work was not political in the sense of organizing, which I think is what's important. My work was not getting caught.
Right. Well,
that was almost like spinning my wheels, you know. So all I wanted to do for that whole period was get back to being a legal person, so I could organize, and that's what I did eventually. That's a whole long story about the legal issues and how they got settled. But
yeah, you turned yourself in 1977, right?
New Mexico, and became. An organizer here in the anti-nuclear movement and the movement involving solidarity with Native Americans who were being thrown off their land. So, it was hard for a person who had basically been an organizer to be sitting on a park bench, not getting caught, especially at a time when in May of 1970, which was 2 months after we went underground, after I went underground. 4 million students were out on strike against the war. This was after the murders at Kent State and the invasion of Cambodia.
Right. Now, I mean, I think in the documentary it said that you had dropped, or I think I read, I can't remember where I saw it, but that you had actually sort of dropped out of SDS and Weatherman.
And other places. I've been talking about the fact that I actually dropped out of the organization, the Weather Underground Organization, by the end of 1970, the first year.
Okay. So when they got started doing all the various bombings around the country, you were not even in the organization at all?
Well, I wouldn't quite go that far. I was associated with the organization pretty closely through 1970, and there were a number of actions,
okay,
including the freeing of Tim Leary from prison.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of bombings and stuff during that time. And I didn't completely sever my connection after 1970. I just wasn't like a voting member of this communistical organization that they had built, because you know they were everything was modeled after a Leninist Communist Party, and there was a central committee, and there were hierarchies, and it was a military kind of organization. So I wasn't a member of that, but I was still associated because my safety depended on having some degree of support.
Sure, sure. Now,
and also I didn't understand that my wanting to remove myself wasn't merely my personal weakness, which is the way I experienced it. I was unable yet at that time to separate myself to go against the strategy, to reject the strategy which we had worked for years to organize for in the organization. So I was loyal to the ideas, and I was loyal to my comrades, and I didn't want to just say it's ridiculous. But I remember thinking that this is a stupid strategy. It's not going to build the movement. And it's actually playing into the hands of the government, which is, I think, what we did.
Right. Okay, that was part two of that part two of that interview. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back in just a moment. I've got a couple. There's another. The last part of this interview is coming up. Again, you're listening to Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
You're listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Well, 2005 is coming to an end. It's been, to say the least, an interesting year. But rather than use 2005's last report to talk about what happened over the past year, I'm going to take the progressive approach and talk about the future. And as anyone who's a regular listener knows, that means good news and bad news. The good news is that little by little, people are waking up to what's been going on in our government. While there are still a core group of people who belong to the cult of personality that the Republican Party has become, the people who have been more or less on the fence have started to pay a little more attention to what's going on. As Paul Krugman of the New York Times recently pointed out, the current administration has proven to be less powerful than we've been led to believe. A year ago, for example, we were predicting the end of Social Security. I predict that this trend towards progressivism will continue. The bad news is that despite some setbacks, the Republican machine is still very powerful and is not going to give up without a fight. I predict that through a combination of gerrymandering and electoral fraud, the Republicans will maintain control of Congress in the elections of 2006. But their margin will still be small enough so that if Democrats remain aggressive, they can prevent the worst aspects of their policies until such time as the population rises against them, perhaps in 2008. All in all, I believe that things will get better, but not before things get worse. Sometimes we have to reach bottom before we can start climbing up. Have a happy new year, everyone. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Right. You're back with Bruce Birch on All Things Reconsidered. Man, am I glad to have you with me tonight. Happy New Year to all of you, man. Just Happy New Year to all of you. You know, Jeff in the chat room says, I wonder how fast this year is going to go by. And you know what? I have no idea, but this past one went by so damn fast. It's hard to... It's like, whoa! You know, I woke up and it was all of a sudden 2006. And last night... See, I'm involved in another radio program called Fourth Estate Radio. And last night... We did a replay because my partner in that endeavor, John Fox, was on holiday all last week, so we didn't have a new show to do. So I played the first part of show number 5 and the second part of show number 1 for Fourth Estate Radio. And then as the new year approached, we were all in the chat room and having a good time, and we did all 10 different versions of All Dang Zion, which was really kind of fun. People were crying. anyway. Okay. We left off before the break talking with Mark Rudd. And actually, we're going to go ahead right on over to finish up that interview. And this is the second part of part 2. So this is part 4, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, we're going back into the interview. Mark Rudd, National Secretary of SDS, former founder or former weatherman, was underground for 7 years. Real principal figure in the, in that organization. So here he is.
So that's a great statement, because one of the next question is, what do you believe now about violent revolution and what brought you to this point?
The armed struggle is counterproductive. I think it doesn't work.
Okay.
And if you look, especially in this country, because no violent political action is recognized as anything other. I said this in the movie, but I've been thinking it for years. Anything other than criminal or mentally ill. That's the way non-governmental violence is considered in this country. So Americans don't understand revolutionary violence. So the only effect of it is to isolate yourself and play into the hands of government. See, these people are violent. They're just crazy people. At the same time, that's kind of what I call a practical argument. There's all kinds of other arguments. One of which is sort of historical. You know what works.
Right,
and I'm not sure that any armed revolution has created what it thought it was creating. What violence creates is dictatorship, revolutionary dictatorship, and that's what's happened. Because there's blood involved, because you're killing and being killed, and it's a cycle of death. It's why the American soldiers in Iraq feel justified when they torture Iraqis, because their friends got killed.
Yeah.
So nobody kills anybody else. That's what I think. Now, there's all kinds of spiritual dimensions to all of this, and ethical and moral. I don't deal with them as much, but I think they're there. about ends and means, you know.
Sure.
And also about the karma of killing and advocating killing. But I think that in the 20th century, the growth of nonviolent political action has been enormous, and that's what we should be studying. I think that's a paraphrase of something Howard Zinn said about the 20th century.
Sure. Just as we wrap up, are there any thoughts that you'd like to communicate to those who are presently against the occupation in Iraq or against the Bush administration?
Let's think about the difference between activism and organizing. What is organizing? Let's kind of think about that a lot. See, back in the anti-war movement, the model we had right in front of us was the civil rights movement. And that was a movement that organized, it grew, and it also had coalition. It believed in coalition and between different types of people, different classes, different ethnicities, different races. That is the nature of true organizing, is coalition in part, and it's also the idea of growth. We haven't been talking, the anti-war movement hasn't really been talking about, most people I know in the anti-war movement, especially young people, call themselves activists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. But they don't ask the right questions about organizing. So what I'm trying to reclaim from this history of the anti-war movement especially, but also the broader history, is the idea of the question of how do we organize? How do we grow? How do we get to our aims? Right? Rather than just how do we put on the next demonstration?
That's fantastic. And I think that's, you know, I would say personally, just from what I've seen around me, that's exactly what needs to happen. Is that, you know, you're always going to have the same core group of 100 people that show up at the same demonstrations over and over and over again, unless there is capacity building, which is exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot to be said about all of this. This is not an easy question. Back in the period 65 to 68, when I was organizing in Columbia, I would say we devoted hundreds of meetings to exactly this question. How do we organize? What do we do? Not how do we have the next confrontation of this 25 people, but how do we grow?
How many people, just sort of as an aside, how many people came and went during those meetings and got frustrated because they felt like, you know, nothing was being done?
Well, I don't know how many came and went, but all I know is the meetings grew and grew and grew.
Okay.
And the core group grew and grew and grew from, okay, about a dozen or six to a dozen to something like maybe toward the time of the takeovers of the buildings in 68, we might have had 50 to 75 people who considered themselves organizers in SDS. And then when we took the buildings and we asked people to join us, we had over 1,000 people on that campus. Then after the cops busted, we had a strike of the majority of students at Columbia University were represented on the Student Strike Coordinating Committee.
Wow.
So it was growth. Everything was oriented towards growth.
Okay.
I mean, I was recruited by a guy named Dave Gilbert, who's in that Weather Underground documentary, who was a senior at Columbia, knocking on my door in the dorms and saying, "What do you think about the war in Vietnam? Would you like to get involved? Would you like to come to an SDS meeting?" We talked about the war in my dorm room. Of course, he went pretty far and eventually got arrested on felony murder charges and is in prison for the rest of his life. But that's another story.
Right, right.
That's when he left organizing, in a sense.
Okay.
He was one of the most brilliant organizers I ever met in my life.
Do you still have a relationship with Bernadine Dorn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all like a distant family, you know,
okay,
brothers and sisters who maybe have gone in different directions. I saw her about a year ago, and we're very friendly.
Cool, cool. So you guys, so pretty much everyone is still, you know, the camaraderie is still there.
Yeah, I mean, but we have our grudges. You know, who fucked over who and who said what and things like that.
Right.
You know, as we get older, we're forgetting a lot more. You know, by the time I get Alzheimer's, I'll probably be completely free of all grudges.
Well, let's hope Ronald Reagan was anyway.
Right? Yeah. Well, he had such a sunny disposition, even though he was a mass murderer.
Yeah, I know. The giggling murderer.
War criminal.
Anything else you want to impart while we have you on the line?
What do you want to talk about? Talk about the Central America war that Ronald Reagan gave us?
I'll tell you what, Mark. How about this? How about if I reserve the right to call you and do some more interviews?
Anytime you like, Bruce. Anything. This is what I enjoy doing at the moment is talking about history and relating it to the present. I'm hoping that everybody who went through that period, which involves several million people who were active, will do this, and that there'll be some exchange with younger people and questions. Oh yeah, I want to mention a book.
Okay.
A fabulous book just out. Called Letters from Young Activists, and it's edited by, I believe it's Nation Books, edited by Dan Berger, Chesa Boudin, who's Dave Gilbert's son, incidentally, and a guy named Kenyon Farrow, is that his name? I don't have it in front of me. It's a great book of letters from young activists who are saying what's on their mind, but also asking terrific questions. And I've been recommending this book to a lot of people.
Well, just for my listeners, what I will do is have a link to that book on my website.
So you might want to interview the authors too, because they've got a lot to say. Read what they say. Kenyon Farrow and I believe that's his name. Gosh, I wish I had the book in front of me. Where is that? Hold on. I do have a card here. That they gave me. So far I bought 5 copies and I gave them all away. And I got another 24 coming in the mail. Here it is. Hold on. Okay. Letters from Young Activists. Today's Rebels Speak Out. It's by Dan Berger, Chesa Boudin, and Kenyon Farrow.
Okay.
With a preface by Bernadine Dorn.
Wow.
Very excellent book. Let's see. Nation Books, 1495.
Okay.
So you can find it on the web.
I'm sure it'll probably be on the Nation's website.
Bruce, I think personally I'd like to suggest that you take a look at it. Maybe even have some of the authors on your show.
I'd love to. I definitely will check it out.
Yeah.
Mark Rudd, it's been fantastic talking with you, and we'll be back. I'll get back with you after the first year, and we'll figure out some other topics we can talk about.
Anything you want to talk about, that's what I do. Cool.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming and visiting with us on All Things Reconsidered and spending your time with us. This is going to be on our Christmas Day show. So if you're up. In the evening and you want to dial into our show, you'll be able to get through it to our website.
Hey, now, when you say it's like a web broadcast,
yes.
But is it archived?
Yes, it is.
So you don't have to be there exactly at that time.
No, you do not. If you look on my website, there is an archives page that has every show that I've done.
Cool.
So you can download it and burn it to a CD and bebop down the road or whatever you want to do.
Wonderful. Well, it's been nice talking with you.
It's been great talking with you too, Mark, and thanks so much, and have a great weekend.
Good. Okay. And keep me informed about the World Can't Wait.
I definitely will. I'll send you some emails.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye. And that was our interview with Mark Rudd. Mark, again, was, and actually, if you were interested in finding out more information about Mark, you can go to wikipedia.org. Just type Mark Rudd in there, and there's a great article in there that I got some information to interview him with that even surprised him. So does that tell you how good Wikipedia is? I don't know. But there's also, you can also go there and type in Weather Underground, and you can get a lot of information that way as well. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. If this is your first time listening to the program, welcome aboard. Glad to have you. If this isn't your first time, keep coming back. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to open up the phone lines. So if you want to get in on the show, the telephone number is 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. We'll be right back after this quick break. All Things Reconsidered is underwritten by Godbold Computer Services of Tallahassee, Florida. Thank you for all you do for All Things Reconsidered.
Listen live every night at HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember him. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday night, 7 to 10.
Head on.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now download off our website at progressive.org. Been making any overseas phone calls lately? Are you happy how cheap and easy it is to use a calling card or to send an email to a friend or relative in Europe or Africa or Asia or Latin America? Well, there's a hidden cost attached. Unbeknownst to you, George Bush's boys may have been listening in on your calls or looking over your emails. If you thought you had a Fourth Amendment right to private communication, think again. According to the New York Times, Bush has unleashed the National Security Agency to monitor the international calls and emails of 500 people in the U.S. at any given time. This has been going on since shortly after 9/11, so you do the math. There's a whole lot of snooping going on, and it's going on without a warrant, which is required by law and by the Fourth Amendment to our Constitution. But as he has in so many areas, Bush, again, has disregarded the law and the Constitution. Like Louis XIV, Bush thinks the law is whatever he wants it to be. There's a story going around the internet that a member of Bush's staff told the president that senators who are objecting to the Patriot Act might have some legitimate constitutional basis for their concerns. Bush allegedly responded, "Stop throwing the Constitution in my face, it's just a goddamn piece of paper." Now, I don't know if that story is true or not,
but Bush sure is acting like it is. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see.
Thanks for listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered. You're probably smarter even right now.
All right. I'm going to start off this second hour with a little bit of Jimi Hendrix. As I said when I went into the break, All Things Reconsidered is underwritten by Godbold Computer Services, so if you're interested in that, check it out. All right, little Jimmy there, but thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy is, gosh, he's been gone a long time. 35 years, I guess, now? Something like that? Almost 36? Glad to have you back. My name is Bruce Birch. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered. Every Sunday night, if this is the first time you've heard this program, every Sunday night at 10 p.m., normally for an hour. Normally I'm off the air by now, and we're listening to Peter Werby doing his magic from WRIF in Detroit, Michigan. But tonight, since Peter's not on the air, we're going to run it, doing a three-hour show as we did last week, and actually did one on Friday night, too. Sort of an impromptu thing. First part of the show, we just did some an interview with Mark Rudd, or the second part of an interview with Mark Rudd. And what I will do, now that we've got all of those out of the way, what I probably will do is go ahead and upload the entire interview. So if you'd like to podcast that interview, look for it on our website by tomorrow sometime. Go to allthingsreconsidered.org and go to Archives, the Archive podcasting page. And there should be a link there to that interview if you want to download the whole thing. Also, if you want to know more about Mark Rudd, go to Wikipedia and find out more about Mark. Mark is really wonderful. He was really fantastic to talk to, and I felt very honored that he readily accepted my request for an interview. So, we gotta honor those folks, man. He has a lot of wonderful wisdom to share. And so, I felt like, hey, let's give him a let's see if he'd be interested in sharing some of it with us. And he did. And we'll be talking with him soon again. Okay, I want to go ahead and let you know that you can call the show now if you'd like to. I mean, it's an open topic thing. It's January the 1st. We're on a new year, man. So we're gonna, let's open this floor up. Let's talk about anything you want to talk about. You can call us at 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. And if you call that number, then just, wait a second while I put you on. I'm going to do it completely unscreened. Completely unscreened. So, when I answer you on the phone, you will be on the air. Whoa, that's daunting. Well, maybe not. So, okay, getting back to some of the stories that's in the media, here's one that really kind of blew me away. Now, this is not really something that's going to affect us tremendously. So, but when I read this story, I got to thinking about this could be me, but not really, but could be me. This particular story is out of Georgia, and apparently, this young lady who works as a, she works in a club, okay? And she's not a waitress. Okay, let me just tell you what she does. This article is out of creativeloafing.com, and this is out of Atlanta, Georgia. Tabby Chase works nights as a dancer at the Clermont Lounge. So she was asleep the morning of Thursday, March 17th, when she says FBI Special Agent Dante Jones called her. Chase says she didn't know what the FBI wanted. When she awoke, it was late afternoon, and she had 5 messages from 3 numbers. She says each was from Jones telling her the FBI needed to ask some questions. Now, Chase is tall and thin with hair buzzed to about a quarter inch, except for long blonde bangs that routinely fall in her face. Apparently, the FBI was tipped off that this young lady who is a dancer could be an enemy of the state. Now, how did that happen? Well, apparently she applied to be a part of a certain organization called Circus to Iraq, which is a group that performs for children in war-torn countries. Okay? But apparently she couldn't scrape together the money to get a plane ticket, and after hearing that several members of the group were killed while in Iraq, she decided against going. She never got around to applying for a visa, and she didn't even have a passport. But apparently, someone along the way heard her talking about doing this and called the FBI on her. The only other thing that might be, that of course the Bushies can't stand, that would put her in a bad light in their mind, is that she's a wobbly. She's a member of the Industrial Workers of the World. Because apparently they're the only union that takes strippers. So if you're a stripper and you're listening to the show, there's a union for you. Go join the IWW. You can go to IWW.org and that'll put you into that website. But this woman was apparently questioned by FBI agents, and corroborating this story is a gentleman named Santiago Velasquez, who's a photographer who's known her for more than 2 years, and he apparently got her a cell phone or something, and the FBI then questioned him because, you know, he got her the cell phone. Just, you know, crazy stuff going on, you know, and I can't help but think that we are, again, seeing days of the brown shirts. I can't help but think that we are again seeing days of the brown shirts. You know, when you see stories like strippers being questioned by the FBI, you know, all hell is breaking loose around us. What's wrong with this picture? All right, that was one of the humorous stories of the evening. If you'd like to get in on the program, please do so, 336-856-2855. A topic that I could suggest for you, the NSA, for instance. You know, does that bother you? Would you like to see more spying? Would you like to see less? Would you like to see the president get impeached? Well, there's a topic for you. What would you like to see for the new year? How did it go over the holidays? Were you able to get along with some people, or did you fight and do politics at family gatherings? You know, any number of topics is open for discussion this evening. 336-856-2855, 336-856-2855. Another story that came across the wire this evening that I thought was really interesting, and actually I saw this on the news. And now I'm not, you know, on this program, I don't claim to try to put out news that you're not going to hear anywhere else. But I saw this actually on the nightly news the other day. And that's that Arlo Guthrie, apparently, has been doing some fantastic work in trying to gather up instruments and gather up money for musicians who lost everything to Hurricane Katrina down in New Orleans. He actually had a house down there, and it was wiped out. But just apparently here recently, he's been working really hard to do that. So I'll have to see if I can find a website address for this. But he has a foundation for New Orleans musicians. He's received pianos, guitars, and other instruments donated from around the world. He says that he's just been grateful to be able to be a part of helping other people. So, and this is a gentleman who wrote The City of New Orleans, which is a story about a train, actually. And I think he rode that into town recently to raise some money, and I think also on New Year's Eve. But at any rate, if you'd like to give us a call, please do so at 336-856-2855. You can also send us an email at allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. www.tomhartman.org. And we're also chatting in the Tom Hartman chat room. If you'd like to, please come through there. It's tomhartman.com, and then you click on live chat, and it'll shoot you right into there, where they're talking about all kinds of interesting things. The IWW, apparently, my friend liberal me says IWW really means Internet Wiggle Women. So, oh, boy. Well, okay. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. My name is Bruce Birch. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered.
Defendant, having been found guilty, is sentenced to 7 years imprisonment. Defendant will be remanded to custody immediately.
On June 4th, my big brother was sentenced to 7 years in prison for a gun crime. That day, he sentenced me to 7 years of not having my best friend to play with.
When you commit a gun crime, your family pays the price. Gun crimes hit home. A public service announcement brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Thurston, where did you suddenly get that walkie-talkie?
I've had it all along, my dove. You see, the statute of limitations on my creative accounting is up. Time to end this tropical charade and return to our billions.
Oh, do we have to go back? It's so cozy here on the island.
My dear, don't you listen to the coconut radio? It's the best time ever to be a billionaire in America. More than half of the last tax cut went to the wealthiest 5%.
But the voters will never allow that kind of thing.
That's what's so marvelous, lovey. The middle class believes they're going to be billionaires someday.
Well, anything's possible in America.
Oh, your naivete is so charming. Charming, my love. The fact is, the gap between them and us is getting wider all the time. W's our boy.
Bush Economics. More than just a three-hour tour. Paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
It's time to connect the Downing Street dots. British memos confirm two things about our ongoing war in Iraq. One, the president staged a media campaign to overstate Saddam's WMD threat. Two, there was little or no planning for a post-war occupation. Connect the Downing Street dots, and you have a war of choice where the president chose not to have a plan.
For more information, visit BuzzFlash.com.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
This is how it started. It's not hard to understand. From coast to coast, they're lying at a CEO's command. From nationalist public radio, CNN and NBC, Big Brother spewing propaganda from the disinformation ministry. They say the economy is booming. We hear the homeless beggars cry. They say we help poor countries. We see bombs falling from the skies. Reality doesn't exist, they're trying to say. But some of us decided there is another way. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. Someone got a transmitter, started up a station. Then the idea spread right across the nation. Like the land and water, the air must be free. So let us shout together, fuck the FCC. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. And we'll do it all together in a grassroots style, tearing down the fences throughout this whole square mile. It's the new town meeting, it's the way the news should be. The rulers call it chaos, we say it's democracy. So when you turn on the radio and you've had it with this shit, from 88 to 107 makes you wanna have a fit. When you listen to the music and it's all the same pop song, start up a pirate station, 'cause that's where you belong. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard.
You're listening to Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. That little song that you heard there, you know, it's a good thing that we're broadcasting over the internet, because there's a couple of words in there that I'm sure the FCC would have a problem with, and that's fine. You can have a problem with it, you know, because this is the internet, and we can do that kind of thing. Now, if I were over the air and on a regular radio station, and whoever's listening to this program, you know, if I were over the air and in a regular radio station, then perhaps I would have to apologize for that, but at this point, I'm not going to. Okay, again, this is Bruce Birch. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. And let's see here. Let's see, we got a caller on the line, it looks like, and that caller is, let's see if we can bring that caller up. All right, let's look and see. Hey, Spike, are you with me?
Hey, Gonzo greetings.
Gonzo greetings, my friend. How are you tonight?
Doing all right.
Fantastic. How's the level there?
It's good now. The music before was pretty loud.
Okay. Well, it was intended to be.
Okay.
Okay. So what's on your mind, Spike? What's going on?
Not too much with me, but I'm really getting more and more a kick out of the story about this kid from Florida who ended up in Baghdad.
Okay.
I just found a report on Yahoo. it's not a real long piece, but it's kind of interesting. It more or less says that he kind of went in almost basically unchecked into the country. He's just a kid. And the easiest way he got in, they credit, is because his parents were born in the country.
Right.
I like how basically if you just have a parent that was born in Iraq, in there. apparently, even if these insurgents are coming from other countries, a lot of them are probably coming from Iraqi descendants or somehow, and they just have this laissez-faire, unless there's an election going on where they close the borders off, they just go in with ease. And
well, I think it's. I also read that story. Now, I mean, apparently this is actually really checking out. I mean, it sounds almost too weird to be true, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I noticed everyone's downplaying the whole reason he turned himself in when he got there is he felt it was too dangerous, and that's not very reassuring news for the quote success that's going on there. The White House would try to lead us to believe. I mean, but Darren ended up he's scared to death of what he saw and had to come running back to America.
Well,
how it's going. I mean, he went into Baghdad and realized that I'm going to get killed here.
Yeah. He apparently this okay. The guide's name is let's see, is Faris Hassan, and he is taking a journalism or a, I guess an English class. He had been just, studying immersion journalism, in which the writer lives the life of his subject. Which I guess would be kind of close to Hunter Thompson, right?
Yeah, kind of almost like the Hell's Angels, except for he got out there, got out of Baghdad before he got stomped on.
That's right.
So he did a little bit of a better job than Thompson to avoid getting hurt.
Right.
But, certainly if he's going to write a story, it's going to be of the Gonzo style, I'm sure, with actually putting himself in the story situation. I just can't wait. 16 years old and he pulled this off. I mean... It shouldn't be that easy for a 16-year-old American kid to end up in the middle of a war zone like that. I mean, certainly, I guess his family had a little money to fund himself doing this.
He flew from Lebanon into Baghdad on Christmas.
First he went to Kuwait, and then they said he couldn't get in because of the elections, because he wanted to be there to cover the elections.
Right.
So he went to Lebanon and crashed with some family there who apparently never called the States to find out about his story. And then he took a plane from Lebanon straight into Baghdad. It's just I find it amazing considering an American can't get into Cuba, yet this kid found a way to go all the way around the world right into the middle of Baghdad.
Right into the middle of the green zone.
Yeah.
There, you know, one of the things that he said, I remember reading a story over a couple days ago that said that he apparently, he went into a restaurant and was trying to figure out how to order food because he doesn't speak any, I guess they speak Farsi? Or
Baghdad, I think there's a few things going on there with different languages.
Okay. Well, he went into this to this restaurant and had one of those dictionaries, you know, English language / Farsi dictionary, whatever it is that they're speaking there. He went in there and tried to order from this book, and they were looking at him very strangely, and he said he got such a bad vibe out of the whole situation, that was when he turned himself in. And I guess he got scared that they realized he was an American, right? Because he looked very Iraq, or his mom and dad are both Iraqis, I think.
Yeah, I remember hearing his brothers on the radio saying he was dumb because he was wearing his American clothes right into the country, too. You know, so if you come stumbling in with a designer polo shirt and designer sneakers and, you know, designer jeans, people are going to start looking at you like, who's this guy very well dressed in a very impoverished country right now? So apparently they felt he didn't do a good job at disguising himself. I think it goes to show that it's still not as smooth as some people are claiming it's going.
No, it's not. And I think it's, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there was a story about, you know, the Doug Thompson in the Capitol Hill Blue, was talking about a program that the military folks were implementing to send soldiers home on leave and saying, you know, this is your job. If you want to go home, you know, on leave, then you have to talk up how good it's going on over here. You know.
Yeah, I heard that piece too. I'm not surprised. Like I said, I found it funny that the local ABC affiliate, well, actually in Scranton, So they embedded a reporter and a camera photographer or videographer over in Iraq with the troops from some Pennsylvania National Guard unit that was kind of in one of the more quiet regions of Iraq to show a school how great things are going. Look at this school we built. And there's no teachers in. They said, oh, the teachers haven't been here about 3.5 weeks now. Happened to them. But everything's going good.
Everything's going, oh yeah. You know, stand for denial.
You know, they're coming up with theories. Oh, maybe the insurgents got to the teachers and intimidated them. And meanwhile, they say, oh, they were 50 kilometers away, in some town 50 kilometers away. It's really hard to travel the roads of Iraq. No one really, unless you're the military, is driving around that country. So I find that a little funny, too, that they're hiring teachers from real far away, and then they can't get to the schools because the military isn't letting anyone drive around some days.
Well, unless, of course, I mean, have you seen the video of the military contractors that were snipers going down the road to the airport?
I don't believe I've ever seen the video. I remember hearing it described in detail, I think, before the video came out on, like, Oberman or something like that.
Right.
And I heard where they were even just going right over vehicles and shooting their way out of something, and their vehicles even had kids in them, and they were just driving right through them. Didn't matter who was in their way. They were getting up to save their own behind.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they're in much higher numbers than our own troops, but Iraqis just see Americans serving there, too, but they see the Caucasian face. They're not paying attention to if they're wearing khaki camouflage or a shirt and tie.
Right.
Armed Caucasians shooting at them. And that's, I think, where our troops really fall on the worst is these mercenaries go out and they'll shoot up a town and the people are bent out of shape over it and they just think it was the Americans. And so when the troops show up later on in the aftermath, they're the ones who get attacked at for it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's really, we've had a fairly, you know, I would say that we've had a real rough time in our efforts of trying to have some diplomacy. Because every time we have some diplomacy or something, you know, something good happens, and all of a sudden, you know, something like the Abu Ghraib story breaks, or the military contractors who are shooting civilians breaks, you know, or like, for instance, I guess it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, they found that secret prison where all these, and I'm not, I shouldn't be laughing, but it was that secret prison where they had like over 100 men and boys. You know, this was the Iraqis now. This wasn't even us, apparently.
Oh, you're not talking about the Romanian prison stuff.
No. I'm talking about actually in I want to say Ramadi. There was a jail that had like, I think it was like over 100 men and women who were in there. Or I'm sorry, men and boys that were imprisoned and tortured, and it was discovered by U.S. military who freed everyone. But I think it was like the Shiites who had imprisoned some Sunnis, or maybe the other way around.
I haven't heard about the prison itself, but I've been hearing a lot about executions done by people in police uniforms. They round up everyone from a certain ethnic group and handcuff them, and then shoot them in the back of the head and toss their bodies like in the I can't remember which river is the big one that goes through Baghdad.
Euphrates, I think.
Euphrates, yeah. And I'm going to admit sometimes names of rivers and stuff in foreign lands and stuff. And I've been reading a lot about that a lot. In deep background, actually, in the American conservative, guy used to work at the CIA, and he's the one writing a lot of that stuff about that.
Really?
Yeah. That magazine, it'll be usually maybe a paragraph, like blurb almost, but a lot more often than not, this guy kind of hits stuff that later on turns out to be a little true. Comes at stuff that fizzles out for some reason or another too, maybe. But I've been reading about, you know, the Sunni Shiites especially. I mean, the Kurds are kind of running their own show up north anyhow, thanks to.
Right. What else? Anything else on your mind tonight, Spike?
Well, just that you know, George Bush has been really trying hard to get the religious fanatics voted in, and you know they've done the same for him here. And it's kind of funny that it looks like the election results in Iraq is going to be the religious fanatic groups all won their different freedoms.
You know, it really begs a question, and I think the question, at least the one that I have, is what are we going to gain? What do we have to gain by putting a government in power that essentially is Iran light?
Oh yeah, I'm literally Iran light. You know, Iran original will be to the other side.
So you have Iran heavy and Iran light. Is this leaded and unleaded? I mean, I don't.
I was doing almost like in beer terms, you know, traditional Iran and Iran, you know, low carb.
And I'm laughing, but it's like, oh my goodness. I mean, you know, we all the money and all the lives, man. 21, I think today is, at this point, it's 2182 that of American lives that have been lost, over 100,000 Iraqis, and this is what's happened.
Yeah, well, I like how Bush nonchalant said 30,000, like that's a low number. That's about... Yeah, times 10,000 to what died on 9/11, and they made a big deal on 9/11. Imagine 30,000.
Yeah, or even 100.
Yeah, or even 100. Yeah. I'm figuring maybe, you know, even if it's in the middle, 80,000. I mean, still up there.
That's still an incredible number.
And worst of all, it's sadly this country has actually taken a step back forward after losing a tyrant dictator like Saddam Hussein. Things should be better, not worse, than when Saddam was there.
You would think so. Well, I mean, we bombed everything, blew everything. I think, you know, we blew up every school and every power plant, and I mean, we basically really did bomb them back to the Stone Age. And now we're over there, you know, rebuilding it all for free. So it's the Bush plan.
Yeah, well. Pretty soon we'll be bombed back to the Stone Ages without the bombs here, the way we've been treated economically.
Well, you know, I would say that the debt that we've sold off to the Chinese is, you know, and to other countries is going to come back and haunt us very quickly.
Oh, without a doubt, especially when we're spending, you know, $10 million a second, it seems, in Iraq right now.
Well, I mean, I would even venture to say that we have already, it's already been coming home to roost, in that, you know, China, I mean, we're courting them now. I mean, it's no longer detente or detente. It's you know, open. It, you know, we're, you know, the president goes over there and really literally is pouring on the you know, the charms, and it's really a shame, because I think that, you know, all, you know, first of all of our jobs have gone there, or not all of them, but a good majority. You know, we had NAFTA. That opened up the whole job market going south of the border, and then it wasn't within, what, 4 or 5 years, all of a sudden China became the biggest textile manufacturer in the world, which then was directly competing with Mexico. So all of those plants that got built down there, a lot of them ended up as ghost towns, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's arguable to say the communists actually kind of won because of the world market.
Ooh.
China is a communist nation, and they're the one getting all the business out of all this now. They're having a booming economy through all this while we're all suffering. So, I mean, the point was made earlier in your interview, maybe communism is dead, but it's strangely, maybe the Chinese form of communism is stronger than ever now, thanks to greedy capitalism and laissez-faire regulations, really.
Right. Well, I really wonder how close to communism the Chinese form of government really is at this point. You know,
I think in some degrees it's still a little extreme, but I think they've become much more lenient since Tiananmen Square on other issues. I helped them out a great deal.
Right. Well, Spike, thanks for calling the program.
Yeah, no problem.
And look forward to hearing from you next week. My friend Spike is, you mind if I name your town?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Well, Spike is from Easton, PA, and is a friend of All Things Reconsidered. Anything else you wanted to share with us?
Not much. Just that once my own voice gets off here, just call 336-856-2855.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Spike.
Have a good one.
Have a wonderful evening. And, okay, well, let's see here. Getting back to thank you, Spike, for calling. And if you would like to call, you can call us at 336-856-2855. I'm going to take a quick break, and let's see here real shortly. And we'll be back with you. Listen to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. And this radio program, you can reach us by going online to allthingsreconsidered.org. You can also call into the program, 336-856-2855. You can also email us at allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. We'll be right back.
Find it in the peace. I think I'll It's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again, so you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots, no hanging chads, in fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing states swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Pick up the billionaire!
All right. Welcome back to All Things Reconsidered. My name is Bruce Birch. It's about somewhere close to 9 minutes, 8 minutes until the top of the hour, which will put us into January the 2nd. Got a couple of things I wanted to discuss with you. That's by the way, that's some wonderful news. Anyway, a couple things. Now, Spike hit on some. Spike just called a little while ago, and we talked about Iraq and some of the stuff that's going on over there, and it really is amazing to me the spin that is put on the news that comes out of Iraq. For instance, he was never, on the one hand they say about this kid, well, he was never really that endangered, but on the other hand, government contractors are running up and down roads shooting people at random, or at least in some of the movies that I've seen. Who's to say that this kid could not, who knows what might have happened to him had he not been, had the good sense to turn himself in, I guess, to the local authorities and get shipped back home. But I want to shift pages, and this is shift conversation a bit back to an event that happened back in at the end of October or at the end of August. And the event that I'm speaking of is Hurricane Katrina. On my September the 4th show, I actually chronicled the event throughout that week and the abuses and the complete insanity that was the government's response to Katrina. And the fact that, bottom line is that we're looking back on this at this point, months and months later, and realizing that the local infrastructure didn't really have it all together either. Now, the local infrastructure, didn't know what to do. I mean, all of this that happened in that town, and all the planning and all the emergency runs that they did, and they had no way to deal with it. In New Orleans, and I think that the one story that sort of goes unspoken is one, or that you didn't hear much about. And I remember seeing on Fox News. I remember, not on Fox. Okay, on other stuff too, MSNBC, CNN. But I distinctly remember watching Fox and watching the meltdown of Horrendo Revolver. Geraldo Rivera and the other gentleman who was down there, and watching them, crying on the TV and watching the anchors trying to spin the negativity that was coming out of New Orleans as if the government's perfectly fine. But the one story that I think that went unsaid, and I'm going to tell you this story right now, and this story is about the citizens of New Orleans who were in jail when this happened. The New Orleans jail complex sits behind the old Gothic Orleans Parish Criminal Court and backs up to Interstate 10 in a rundown area of the city. On the days following Katrina, the entire complex sat beneath feet of water. At that time, the jails housed more than 8,000 prisoners, the majority of whom were pretrial detainees, people with the fundamental presumption of innocence, but without the funds for bail or a lawyer to get them out before trial. There was even larger than usual population of pretrial inmates when the storm came because before it arrived, the police had conducted sweeps to clear the streets, picking up people for petty crimes like loitering or trespassing, and because other parish jails had evacuated their prisoners to New Orleans. Despite the universal awareness of the risk of flooding in the city, the low-lying jail failed to execute any real evacuation plan. Instead, even faster than New Orleans police abandoned the citizens of New Orleans, many of the sheriff's deputies who guard the city's prisoners abandoned their charges and left men and women wondering whether they were going to die as water rose in the locked cells. Prisoner Dan Bright told Human Rights Watch, "They left us to die there." Prisoners helped one another escape the flood by prying open cell doors, breaking through windows, and finding higher ground in the jail. While officials deny that any bodies were found, many prisoners who were there insist they saw floating bodies. Those who made it out were rounded up by the few remaining guards and gathered on a nearby interstate overpass. People remained there for almost 2 days without water, under the sun, appearing as a blur of orange jumpsuits from the CNN cameras and helicopters flying overhead. They were left to urinate and defecate on themselves, hampered by restraints so tight that a month later, attorneys who visited them could still see dark purple bands wrapped around their wrists. Eventually, buses arrived and the detainees were transferred randomly to prisons around the state, but without the papers that might easily distinguish a person who had been arrested for illegally reading tarot cards or angling without a license from someone charged with a serious violent crime. As bad as this was, it was only the beginning of the indignities the evacuated prisoners were to face. They found themselves in an impromptu patchwork of overcrowded state prisons, parish jails, and facilities opened just to accommodate evacuated prisoners. The unluckiest among them, mostly from Jefferson Parish, found themselves at Jenna Correctional, a former juvenile prison owned by the Wackenhut Corrections Corporation that was closed down by the Juvenile Justice Project of Louisiana, Human Rights Watch, and the Justice Department. Okay, folks, some of these stories that are here in this are really amazing to me. And this is out of The Nation magazine, just to give that a plug. And the reason why I say it's amazing to me is that there are people right now who are still in jail, you know, who may have gotten a public drunk, drunkenness or intoxication charge, you know, 2 days and been convicted of it 2 days before Katrina, who might have had to serve, you know, a couple of weekends in jail, but instead, you know, they entered the hell that is the penal system in Louisiana, and they can't get out. Case in point, as recently as mid-November, David Moffitt, a 43-year-old man from New Orleans, was still incarcerated in a Bossier Parish jail on a 10-day sentence that he began on August 22nd for public drunkenness. You know, I mean, it is truly amazing. New Orleans itself does not have a full-time public defender, even though the city is obligated by the Sixth Amendment to provide free attorneys to poor people who are otherwise unable to defend themselves. The service in New Orleans is provided through the Orleans Parish Indigent Defender Board, which contracts with a group of part-time attorneys. Now, these folks are trying to get out to these other prisons to try to figure out what to do with all these folks, but, you know, it's amazing to me. There's the recent, you know, we're looking at some of the lasting effects of what happened in Louisiana. In the chat room, someone, who was it? I'm going to look back up here. Klan posted that there were actually 1,300 kids, 1,300 children still missing. You know? And you know what? I think that's just inexcusable. There were so many stories of children being separated from their parents, of parents being separated from each other and shipped to different parts of the country. And one cannot, I mean, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, one cannot help but think that, you know, even though it happens sort of like as a very disorganized way that there was some ulterior stuff in mind when that happened. You know, to disseminate the largest liberal progressive population in Louisiana to parts unknown. We have reached the top of the hour. Happy January 2nd. My name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things Reconsidered. We're going to take another quick break, and we will be back directly. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. If you'd like to visit us online, please go to allthingsreconsidered.org. You can also come to the Tom Hartman chat room, tomhartman.com. Click live chat, and that'll get you in there. If you'd like to contact the show, you can do so during the break, or you can do so after the break. The telephone number is 336-856-2855. We're going to keep going until 1 a.m., special edition of All Things Reconsidered, and we'll be right back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. Here are my wishes for the new year. I wish that my parents make it through 2006 without slipping way down the treacherous slope of old age. I wish that my wife Jean and our three kids remain healthy and happy and continue to bring joy on a daily basis, the best kind of joy. I wish that my brothers and sisters, my in-laws, nephews, and nieces all maintain balance and reserve time for fun. I wish that our friends fill their year with love and with play. I wish that the progressive finds better financial footing so we can keep shouting from the hilltops. I wish that the alternative media in general prospers and that the open-air journalism school of the blogosphere keeps churning out skilled graduates who keep the mainstream media on its toes and all of us better informed. I wish that the peace movement burgeons so we can pressure Congress to end this crazy Iraq war and bring all the troops and all the bombers home before another bloody year passes. I wish that the movement to protect democracy in America gains strength as it takes on the predators in the White House and the fulminators of right-wing fundamentalism in our culture. I wish for more indictments. May Patrick Fitzgerald bring low those who have abused their power. And may the House of Representatives rise to the task of indicting this president for high crimes and misdemeanors. So here's to peace and to impeachment in 2006. I'm Matt Rothschild, wishing you a happy and progressive new year.
Thank you.
All right, this is Bruce Birch back with you on All Things Reconsidered. Yeah, we took a little quick break there, but we're gonna stick with this topic of what happened in Louisiana for a little while. And in the chat room, my friend Blue just advised me to tell people to go to C-SPAN. You can go to www.cspan.org and then go to House Select Committee Hearing on Katrina Response. And that was apparently on December the 6th. But I think it's just a tragic, you know, it's a tragedy all the way around, of course, but there's still people who are living through this tragedy right now. And on the line right now I have Peter. Peter, how you doing?
Good evening, Bruce. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great, but I'll get better, as my friend Tom Hartman likes to say.
Great. Well, Bruce, your voice level is kind of low on the call, but
is that better?
Listen to when, that seems a little better.
Okay, great.
Okay, good, good. You know, you're talking about the situation with the prisoners in New Orleans, and that's something that really upsets me. That's a real hot button for me. The treatment of people who are imprisoned. I think I've mentioned before in the show I've was addicted to drugs for 15 years, and so I've had run-ins with the law, and I've certainly been in jail before. And one thing that people don't always realize is that people who are incarcerated in jails are not convicted necessarily.
Right.
Many of these people simply can't make bond, and they have to wait in jail till their court date. So there are innocent people involved in this, people who would be found not guilty. And even the ones who are guilty and are sentenced to jail time, they certainly were not sentenced to being held in a jail in New Orleans while the water rose up to their ankles and rose up to their knees, and they stood there in their cells screaming for help and rose up to their waist and rose up to their chest, and they stood in the bunks. It's unbelievable what those people have been through. And, you know, there are people spread out. They have no idea where these people are.
I know.
And those that were actually sentenced, many of them, their sentences, they should be released. Their sentences have run out. In other words, you're sentenced to 6 months in jail, you're sentenced to 9 months in jail, whatever. Many of those sentences are up now. These people are being held in prisons God only knows where, with no court date to be released or no one to do the paperwork to release them, because there's no one staffing the courts. There's no electricity, no staff. The courts in New Orleans are completely inoperative. It's an outrageous thing what's going on with those people in New Orleans. It really is.
You know, and as I read in the story, a lot of them, you know, a lot of this happened when they went through New Orleans right before the hurricane hit. The policemen did, and they sweeped the streets. So some of these people were arrested, and perhaps, you know, just picked up because the policemen wanted them off the street, and trumped up some charges against them. Now half of these policemen aren't even with the force anymore.
Well, that's a good point too.
You know, when the time comes for these people to go to court, what's going to end up happening, you know, is that they're going to be found innocent, but they will have been in jail for over 3 months or over 4 months, probably.
No, there's probably even no paperwork on them. If they were just arrested and taken into a jail and booked in to get them off the streets or whatever in a street sweeping operation, it's very, very likely that their paperwork was never filed. Their paperwork is probably just a soggy, crumbled ball floating around in a river somewhere. They're probably undocumented prisoners.
Yeah, absolutely. You know there are.
It's just very upsetting. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, another thing you're talking about tonight too. The thing about the soldiers coming home from Iraq on leave of being told that they needed to promote the war is another outrage. And you know, I've heard so many of the progressive talk shows where a quote military person who says I was in Iraq and you're all wrong and things are getting better hits every single one of the talking points.
Uh-huh.
In an article that I read recently. And you know that they're doing it so they can just you know, tape record the call or get the word out that yes, they did. In fact, because they're told that they'll get an early release date if they promote this damn thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I think is especially you know, aberrant to me is the fact, you know, and I don't want to get away because I want to go back to the New Orleans thing in a minute, but is the fact that the Bush crime family, and I'm going to call them that. That's what Mike Malloy calls them, but it fits. I mean, it's like the mob. You know what I'm saying? When somebody screws up really bad, they get promoted instead of demoted, you know?
Well, it's true. It's true. All you have to do is be loyal. You don't have to be competent.
That's right. You don't have to be competent. Just as long as you're loyal, you know, then you're good to go. But what amazes me is that they do not, these guys don't govern. What they do is they operate a perennial campaign, you know? And we're going to see it very, very shortly. And one of the stories that I had that I was going to talk about tonight, I don't know if I'll get to it or not, but one of the stories that I had that I was going to talk about tonight was about the fact that Bush is going to come out of this vacation where he's down there in Crawford clearing brush, you know.
Oh, yes, yes, to make room for the horse, I guess.
Yes. The horse is going to milk?
Yeah.
Okay.
How well you know me.
I'm sorry. Well, I had to throw that one in there, you know. But you know, he's going to come out of this vacation in Crawford, and he's going to come out blazing with both guns, trying to turn around this political misfortune that he's gotten himself into. You know, and you know, I'm really hoping that whatever he does will be too little, too late. But I'm also not going to underestimate the stupidity of the American population either. As much as I hate to say that, you know, this is a population of people that would rather watch, you know, Desperate Housewives than realize that every facet of their life is under a microscope.
Well, regardless of whether, well, let me put it like this. Yes, there's a huge core of people that no matter what happens and no matter how much is exposed are going to believe it was a liberal conspiracy to overthrow God's president.
Excuse me?
No matter what happens with Bush, with the truth coming out, even if he does fall, which I pray that he does, I'm just saying that there's a huge core of people that will always say it was a liberal conspiracy,
oh, yeah,
a conspiracy that kicked him out of office. It was all lies that kicked him out of office, and that we were, in fact, toppling God's president.
Yes. You know, this is the same God's president. I want to make sure that this gets into the record. NSA people, are you listening? This is the same God's president that had invited the gay, what was his name, Jeff Gannon?
Oh, yes, Jeff Gannon.
Who had over 100 comings and goings from the White House, who was supposed to be a press guy. He was working for a trumped-up internet news service, and had hundreds of comings and goings from the White House, the majority of them at times when there weren't even press conferences. Wonder what he was doing.
Well, what he was doing was on the taxpayer's clock, turning tricks. And God knows which one of them it was, but that's probably one mystery we'll never find out. I just can't. That was just outrageous.
It was.
You know, a recent thing that's happened, too, the National Conference on Aging just happened a few weeks ago in Washington, D.C. Now, this has gone on for many, many years. It's an established national conference of leaders in aging and everything from providing food like Meals on Wheels to providing Alzheimer's help for people with Alzheimer's and support for families, people who have relatives who have Alzheimer's. It goes on and on and on. It's huge. Every year, or every conference, rather, the president has always addressed that group. President Bush just turned his back on them.
Yeah.
He didn't even bother to show up. Furthermore, he postponed the thing and postponed it and postponed it until just a few weeks ago. It was supposed to have been much, much earlier, but he managed to get by with it. And another thing, too, the reason he did that is because he didn't want to face the music. The people in aging in this country, the professionals, the people who know what's going on, are outraged at this so-called drug benefit program, which is really a pharmaceutical corporation benefit program. And there was actually a slight to the gay community there, too. Even though Bush didn't show up, I forget exactly how it worked out, but normally there's a representative from the gay community there that has to do it. It's an organization. I wish I could call their website off the top of my head about aging issues regarding gay people, because you know we get old too. But the thing is that they were completely kicked off the agenda altogether. they've always been welcome there. People came away from that conference very, very upset with this man, and the seniors are going to be finding, and they're finding it already. It's even being covered on the Alphabet News that the drug prescription benefit is a nightmare. It's impossible to sign up for it, and I think if every one of us suddenly went pro-Bush except for the older people, I think that would be enough to topple them. I think the older people in this country alone are going to throw this bastard over.
Yeah. You know, speaking about that, just briefly, my mother and father, who are both in their late 70s or mid-70s, went and tried to sign up for the new Medicare D thing, and found it to be, the people who are selling the insurance are insurance salesmen. Well, I think in my mind, Peter, insurance salesmen are probably one step above used car salesmen. You know what I'm saying?
Well, this is true. This is absolutely true. There's especially in the Deep South, there were companies that preyed on uneducated blacks, mm-hmm. and they ran rural insurance routes out into the boondocks and the dirt roads and the little shacks, and they sold them policies that they paid 25-30 cents a week, and the guy would like run a route or run a debit, they called it, and collect this 25-30 cents a week. And by the time it was over, they had paid in $5,000-$6,000 for a policy that's benefit face value was $800-$900.
Oh no.
Yes, the insurance industry has a lot to atone for, in my opinion.
Well, and this is my point. My mother, who actually has her doctorate in chemistry and physics, very educated, woman, sat down with this insurance guy, and basically, I think when she left him, he was very grateful because she made him go to work to try to figure out answers to her questions, and she said to me, she says, Bruce, you know how I am with this kind of stuff. I research and research and research and research, and then I ask questions that are tough questions, and try to find the real answers to stuff and not just the hype that they're trying to sell you. And she says, this guy couldn't answer. He says, I don't think he knew as much as I did about it. So, so the insurance salesmen don't even know what they're selling.
Well, yes, and they're programmed with the what do they call it, buzzwords.
Yeah.
To go in and sell to people who have no clue what's going on. Your mother was in probably much better position than most to deal with the guy, and he probably didn't know what hit him.
And I think the other unfortunate part of this is that, you have the AARP, which isn't taking any kind of leadership role in this, so there's really no way for these seniors to get together and have a voice for them in this arena. It's really pretty sad.
Well, they were certainly the aging community, the people who were in those agencies were certainly kissed off several weeks ago by the Bush administration, and that didn't sit real well with them at all.
Well, and he's kissing everyone off. I mean, he's basically, at this point, he doesn't care who he likes or who likes him, as long as he can get the agenda done that he had in plan, had in place when he took office. That's all he cares about. And I think that this regime is, at this point, they're just moving forward as fast as they possibly can to get as much done as they can before the American people wake up and realize that they just had a date with, someone who was carrying, typhoid.
this is true. And it's a huge inconvenience for them that some of these things are being blocked, and it's about time by the Democrats. The Social Security thing didn't get through, and a number of other things haven't gotten through recently that were dear to their hearts. Of course, things did get through, like the Alaska thing and a few others. But you're right. It's a desperate attempt to grab as much gold as possible before the ship sinks.
Yeah.
And desperate attempt.
And I think, excuse me, and I think what we're going to see after
this, you know, whenever he decides to come back to work this week, I think they're talking about him coming back on the 6th of January. But when he gets back to work, what I believe you're going to see is a renewed campaign. It's not going to be, I mean, it's, you know, because that's, as I said before, they don't govern. They just live from one campaign to the next. You know, it's to sell Social Security. And he went out gallivanting around the country when he needed to be worrying about other stuff. And, you know, to sell this Social Security pitch thing to, you know, selected audiences to make it look like, oh, everybody's in love with the idea. You know, so when he gets back to town, watch for the renewed campaign on trying to get this agenda done. And I think that the State of the Union address is probably going to be the perfect venue for him to try to lay out something to salvage how badly he screwed up his presidency. You know, but Peter, before I get you off the line, the one thing that does bother me is that we're not seeing any sort of real alternative from what's supposed to be the opposition party, are we?
No, we're not seeing any real alternatives, and I'm hoping that what they're thinking they're trying to do is that they're working on an agenda, but they're not going to be bringing it out till maybe June or sometime in the middle of the summer, so that it doesn't get attacked so badly. You know, the longer the Republicans have to attack, the worse things get. Maybe they're saving it for later to try to do it before the elections at a later date, but our support now, I have to agree with Joe the other night, who was on Bob's show. Mm-hmm. The support that we're seeing right now it really has much more to do with Bush sinking than us being loved.
I know. Well, you know, and you can look at that one of two ways. I was thinking about that yesterday, and you know, you can look at it like, well, you know, we're the Republican Party is imploding, and therefore, you know, we're going to get some people who are jumping ship and realizing that they're just screwed up, and they're going to come back to us, you know, to the Democratic side. But, and then I was thinking, well, you know, what are we selling? Do we have anything that's even really, you know, worthwhile? You know, and I thought we needed to win based on our merits, not based on the implosion of the Republican Party. But then I had another thought. Now, this will confuse it all even worse, and that is that maybe our principles never changed. Maybe the left, maybe the progressive side of the aisle, you know, our principles never changed, and we still stand for the same stuff that we'd stood for before the American public decided to go all crazy for, you know, the conservative point of view. And maybe people are realizing that, you know, the progressive point of view, if you will, you know, is something that they really did like after all. And so they're coming back to this side of the aisle and saying, okay, you know what, we took a vacation, but okay, we're back with you. Of course, you know, time will tell and see whether we actually pick up seats, but you know, I can't help but think that that's what the Democratic Party is doing, is saying, hey, why should we change? We still stand for the same things we always stood for.
Well, Bob Kincaid in the chat room, I think it was last night, made a very good point, and that was that at this time, the people that we need to talk to, the people that we need to bend their ear, are the what I think you referred to them as moderate Democrats or middle-of-the-road Democrats, to convince them that it needs to be swung further to the left. And I have to agree with that, although that's hard work.
Oh, yes.
I have to agree with him, because the ones who are still thinking Republican at this point have to be complete imbeciles. They're morons and can't comprehend and deal with human speech anyway, so why bother?
They sit around and groom each other, right?
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, yeah, I could just see one of those snake handling services where they they all start grooming each other. And
oh,
snakes.
My goodness.
Yeah, a real jungle scene.
Oh, boy. Well, that's but yeah, I agree with you, and I think that probably, there's going to have to be a lot of work that's got to be done. Here in North Carolina, we put a voter verified law into effect, voter confidence bill, if you will.
I was noticing something about that today. That's great news.
And if anyone wants to go check that out, ncvoter.net. But, you know, I think nationwide states need to put this into effect. You know what? Screw the federal government with voting. They need to stay out of voting. I think the states need to still, I know that, you know, a lot of people will probably disagree with me on that, but I think that if there were a federal standard, it would make it a lot easier to for whoever's in charge of the federal government to tamper with the system. That's just me.
You have a good point, and you know, states' rights are great, but and just looking at marriage, the reason today that states, individual states, have their own the ability to come up with their own marriage laws and honor or not honor other states' marriages has to do back has to do with racism. That
right.
was all handed back to the states about the time, if I didn't get it wrong, about the time that blacks were able to marry whites and vice versa.
Right, right.
It was just done to dump it off to the states so that it could be fought at that level. But this was after the big civil rights marches and the things that went on back in the day.
Peter, it's wonderful talking with you tonight.
Well, I enjoyed talking with you too, Bruce. The thing about the prisoners and it just really, really rang my bell. I immediately said, "See you, bye," out of the chat room and dialed. I can't, that's something that's it's Guantanamo happening right here in the U.S.
Well, it is, you know, and actually, you know, it's continuing to happen. And before I get you off the line, there was a story that I read today that was just so sad, and I'm going to have to pull it back up because I think I want to mention it to you while I have you actually on the line. Let's see if I can find it. Yes, here it is. All right, let me just read this to you, Peter. I want to get your reaction from this. Okay, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, this is out of Grapevine, Texas. A family of three Hurricane Katrina evacuees facing eviction were found dead Friday in their North Texas apartment in what police said appears to be a double murder-suicide. Found with gunshot wounds were a 40-year-old man, a 37-year-old woman, and a 14-year-old boy. Apparently, they were to be evicted. They were supposed to be out of the apartment on Tuesday, but the complex gave the family a few extra days. They were receiving assistance from FEMA. And who knows what the real story is there, Peter? You know? But I can't help but think that had this family been given the right resources following that natural national disaster, that they would probably still be alive today.
I have to agree with you.
And you know what? We are going to continue, I believe, we're going to continue to see stories like this. Because, you know, at this point, these people are finally really realizing that they don't have anything.
Well, it's true, Bruce, and in the work that you do, working with veterans, you know much more about post-traumatic stress than I ever will. But these people must be going through that. So there's that factor added into the fact they have no money, no place to stay. What's happening in this country is unfathomable. I can't believe it's the same country I was born in.
Yeah, it is unfathomable. And I think that, you know, based on just that one story alone, that is indicative of the fact that what needed to happen was another WPA. You know, that we needed to have another Works Progress Administration, a Public Works Administration, that came in and said, we're going to rebuild New Orleans, we're going to rebuild the levees, and we're going to put all these people back to work, we're going to make them want, you know, make them, you know, care about being American citizens again. Well, these people, including that family of three, a lot of them.
I agree. I remember my mom talking about the WPA. It affected a lot of people's lives, and I know my family went through hell back in the Depression, and as did many. And she spoke about the WPA, you know, you're absolutely right. But there's no foresight. There's no interest in the people. There's only interest, self-interest, being served in Washington, and the ship is sinking. They know it, and it's grabbed the gold.
It is, and to actually put something in place that, I mean, because the Bushies, they hate FDR. They hate everything that FDR stood for. Okay, so for them to actually put something in place that might even be remotely close to what FDR. Some of the things that FDR did, you know, he couldn't get past his pride to do that. So, well, thanks for calling the show, Peter.
Well, Bruce, I love you, dude. And at a three-hour marathon, you go, man.
Who knows? We might get used to this and just, you know, run over Warby every night. No, we won't do that. I love my friend Peter. He has a fantastic show. And so, you know, it's kind of cool that when he goes off the air and goes on vacation, that gives me the opportunity to really open up and create a different kind of radio program for this hour. But thanks for calling, and you know, and as always, you know, thanks for being such a great supporter of All Things Reconsidered.
Well, I do it only because it's something of extreme value, and progressive talk radio keeps me sane.
Me too. Doing it and listening. All right, man. Have a great week, and I'll hopefully we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. You take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Again, you can. That was Peter from Tallahassee, Florida, and you can come and chat with us in the Tom Hartman chat room if you're listening to this program. Please do so. You can get there by going to TomHartman.com. And Peter is always, he always has wonderful stuff to talk about. So if you would like to, please do so. Come join us. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. My name is Bruce Birch. You are listening to All Things Reconsidered, talk radio for the enlightened and compassionate. Uh-oh. Maybe not right now. Maybe we'll take a break in a few minutes. No, this is Bruce Birch. You listen to All Things Reconsider.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download right off our website at progressive.org. Amid the revelations that the FBI has been monitoring mosques in Muslim neighborhoods, I came upon the following story. It's about Munir Mario Rashid, a 16-year-old junior at Calvine High School in Sacramento. On September 27th, two FBI agents came to that school to question Munir. "I was scared," he told the LA Times. "I didn't know what was going on or what I had done wrong." Evidently, what he'd done wrong was to scribble the initials PLO on his binder. 2 years ago, back then he'd gotten into an argument with his math teacher, who called the PLO and anyone who defends it a terrorist. Munir's family thinks the teacher might have turned him in. At Calvin High, the FBI agents asked Munir about the PLO, about investigations of Muslims in nearby Lodi, California, and whether he had pictures of suicide bombers stored on his cell phone. Munir told agents that the only photo he carried on his phone screen was that of a mosque. These days, that might have made the FBI even more suspicious. According to the FBI, the questioning took about 20 minutes, and at the end, the agents decided not to pursue the matter any further. Munir, though, was reportedly badly shaken by the questioning and has since been hesitant about expressing his political views in any context, his attorneys say. "He didn't express those political views to me, that's for sure. He didn't return my phone calls." That's where we are as we end 2005 with a huge cloud hanging over our civil liberties. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. You know, building a democracy is a lot like building a house or tending a garden. It takes a lot of work to construct, and once finished, it requires constant attention, or else it'll become infested with pests like cockroaches or termites. As nations grow in size and wealth, the political and financial power that comes from it attracts the worst sort of people. Like cockroaches, they prefer to remain hidden while they do their work, and like termites, if left unattended, they can eventually bring the whole house down. And like roaches and termites, we'll never be entirely free of them, but if we work together, we can limit the amount of damage they can do. As I see it, the USA is a house that's rotting from the inside, infested with roaches and termites in the form of self-serving politicians and corporations who see government as a way of filling their pockets and damn the consequences. It's not the first time we face this problem, and it won't be the last, but we've reached a point where it's going to take a lot of work to straighten it all out. Now, we've stood by and done nothing while a lot of damage has been done. A stolen election, an illegal war, an administration and political party that believes it's above the law, all these are serious issues that have been largely ignored because we think we can withstand it. Newsflash, we can't. Other nations and empires have fallen because of this. Ours is not unique. And if we don't get serious about it soon, we won't have a house to live in. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
You're listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered.
Hi. LOL. Well, AISI, it was NBD.
Kids are spending more and more time online, and even if you heard what they're typing, you probably wouldn't know what they're saying.
Some PPL, whatever. ISS.
They chat online in a language full of acronyms, and unless you use it every day, you won't understand it.
YIWGP.
You won't know what they're saying, or who they're saying it to. A lot of times, neither do they. Last year, 1 in 5 children was sexually solicited online. So here's an acronym for you. HDOP. Help Delete Online Predators. To protect your kids' online life and to get a full list of acronyms kids are using, call 1-800-THE-LOST or visit cybertipline.com. A message from the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and the Ad Council.
1 + 1 = 2. Eat ice cream too fast and you'll get a brain freeze. Always talk quietly in the library.
If you're going to be 2 hours late, pick up the phone and call!
Remember, you're always teaching. Teach carefully. React with rage and kids will learn it's okay to do the same. Keep your cool and kids will do likewise. For advice, visit actagainstviolence.org. Brought to you by MetLife Foundation, National Association for the Education of Young Children, and the Ad Council.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. This is Bruce Birch, and you're listening to All Things Reconsidered, our 3-hour special edition, which is, we're in the last 20 minutes or so. It's about 38 minutes past the hour or thereabouts. There is a little bit of a lag on the stream, so, you know, we're going to have to live with part of that. You know, and I got some stuff out of the chat room there about Hurricane Katrina, and that people were very grateful. Or at least, you know, we're saying that they're thankful that I remembered Katrina. You know, and I got to tell you, I'm going to be point blank honest about this. And that is that when this happened, when Hurricane Katrina happened, I sat here. Now, I had just started this show. I had just started the show probably. Now, I'd done a couple of shows in July and realized that, oh my goodness, I've got to have a bunch more equipment if I'm really going to do a radio show. So, I had a bit of a hiatus, and if you go to the archives page on allthingsreconsidered.org, you will see that there's a little bit of a gap in between the two July shows and then, you know, into August. But when Katrina happened, I sat here and I watched it on television, and I listened, you know, on the radio to the things that were happening down there, and I heard the right wing people doing everything they could possible to make it, you know, to place blame before the progressives had a chance to, is what I understood them to be doing. You know, and the only winner out of all of the whole, out of everything, the only winner was tragedy. The only winner out of the entire thing was tragedy. There's 1,300 kids missing. There's probably as many people in jail, you know, still in jail who are there without any kind of paperwork, who need to be released. There are people missing. There are families that have been completely changed by this tragedy. You know, and what we saw our government do was not try to boost, you know, morale by going down there and doing everything they could to make the harrowing experience something that people could at least that they could at least live through it, you know, with the comforts of having their life. Instead, the government stayed away. You know, instead the government sent Walmart. Instead the government trucked water all around the country. Instead the government sent ICE all over the country, including to Maine, you know. Instead, the government turned its back on these people and left them to die and left them to live in their own squalor and left them to live in their own defecation. Out of the same Nation magazine, this is the January 2nd edition, Susan Strait says, recently in a municipal auditorium in Southern California, across the country from Louisiana, in a crowd of 1,700 for a touring black theater production, a comedian warmed up the audience with Katrina because black Americans have not finished with her. He began, "Y'all, Katrina was hard on us. She beat us down, didn't she?" The audience began to shout, "She wasn't no Category 4 hurricane, y'all. She was a Section 8 hurricane. Man, from the projects. Look at her name, Katrina. She sounded like Section 8, don't she?" The audience screamed with laughter. The comedian's bald head shone as he threw out his arms. "She was whamming around, banging on doors, hollering, 'Is it a man in there? A man?' Then he whirled across the stage with arms outstretched, shrieking improvised karate-style calls as the hurricane moved through the landscape the audience saw. 'He better have my check. I'm gonna get wild up in here in Louisiana. Where's my money?'" Now, I'm paraphrasing here because I was surrounded by clapping and stomping feet in all of our calls, so loud the comedian waited patiently, expertly, for enough quiet to move on. "Now the brother with the TV, where the hell is he going? Where did he plan to plug that sucker in?" And everyone knew exactly who he was talking about. Everyone in America saw him, right? But then the comedian shook his head. "Katrina whooped up on us, y'all," he said. "White folks were evacuees. We were refugees. We were looters. White folks were finders." He waited for the laughter to die. "No, y'all, for real. But some white folks were cool." He stalked off to the right side of the stage and began to hitch up his pants. "The government was treating us so bad, like dogs, y'all, that even the Klan stepped in." He pulled his pants up higher, moved his shoulders, and changed his whole face. "They sure did." He paced the stage deliberately, slowly, and said in a Klan voice, "Man, the government can't do this to y'all. It ain't constitutional. We can do it, but the government can't. Even I feel bad for y'all." He reached behind him and took the white handkerchief he'd been using to wipe sweat from his scalp and draped it over his head and face, and the audience went wilder. He bent slightly and imitated the man reaching out a hand as if from a boat or plane and said, "Come on, Fred. Get in. No, get in. I'm trying to help you." He shook the proffered hand. "No, it's okay, okay, it's me, George." He lifted up the handkerchief so the audience could see his face again. "Now get on up out of the water and come on in here." When the stomping and screams died down, he wiped his face again and smiled. "Anybody out there from New Orleans?" A group of 10 or so, mostly women, hollered and waved from the seats. "You made it, y'all," he said and waved back. How succinctly could it be put that this tragedy that happened in New Orleans was a perfect example of how racism is alive and well in the United States of America? No, they weren't finders, and no, those people hadn't found resources to keep themselves alive. They were looters. Right? According to Fox News and CNN and MSNBC and ABCDBBDBD, these people were looters. You know? May we never forget them. May they always be in the front of our mind when we're watching people who are who live in low-lying areas, when they live in places that are prone to natural disasters. And let's not forget those people, because they're still spread out all over the damn country. They need to be brought back to New Orleans if they want to go back. And those levees need to be built back, so much better than they were before. It is a tragedy that is ongoing. It blows my mind. Still blows my mind even today, 4 months later, 3 months later. We got about 15 minutes left in the show. You can call us if you'd like to get on the program. You can do so by calling 336-856-2855. That number again, 336-856-2855. I really would love to talk with you. Love to have a conversation with you, even though we're getting up toward the top of the hour. And I just want to give you a quick update. You know, there's a poll that MSNBC put out a couple of weeks ago that has had a remarkable result, and that is that the question was, do you believe President Bush's actions justify impeachment? Now, we are up to 188,237 responses, and this is the number one answer. It says, yes, between the secret spying, the deceptions leading to war, and more, there is plenty to justify putting him on trial. 86% of 188,237 responded yes. 4% say no. I'm sorry. A combined 12% say no, and then 2% say they don't know. And I don't know where that 2% comes from. If somebody would like to do the math and figure out how much 2% of 188,237 is, because we need to find those people and we need to force them to listen to our radio program. If you'd like to give me a call, please do so, 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. And we got a call coming in right now. So we're going to go ahead and switch over to that telephone call. Mr. Kincaid, how are you tonight?
Hello, this is Agnes.
Oh, hey.
Hey,
Agnes, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
Notice how my voice went up 8 notches there. I don't know what that was about, but...
What was that?
I said, notice how my voice went up about 8 notches. I don't know how that happened, but how are you doing tonight?
I didn't notice that.
How are you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. Not too bad.
What's on your mind?
Well, Katrina.
Okay.
Nothing bad. I promise you won't even have to look at the dump button.
Well, I don't have one, and this is the internet radio, so hey, let it all hang out.
I know. Bob won't let me do that, He smacks me with the whip every once in a while and puts me back in my cage.
Uh-oh. So tell me, Hurricane Katrina's on your mind.
I'm following up on the story of the family.
Okay.
Homicides and suicide. PTSD from something that cataclysmic happened, and yet Reaganomics is taking over and the government's just going to leave it alone?
Yeah. I'm sorry, were you able to hear me?
Huh?
Okay.
That sound good?
Yeah. Absolutely. So Reaganomics allowed it to happen.
I think that George is following Reagan's footpaths a lot of ways.
I agree. I think that it's I think it's amazing that the president, the resident, what he did with Katrina to me is just completely criminal. I mean, even beyond all the other stuff that he's done that's actually criminal according to the law books,
there's morally wrong, you know, there's legally wrong, and then there's morally wrong. And if this wasn't morally wrong, then I have no idea what was. I mean, I gathered my kids around me and I said, watch this. This is what happens when government is completely wrong. You know, and they sat on the couch and cried with me. You know what I'm saying? As these people, you know, it just amazed me.
Look at your children and say, you know, here in a few years, there won't be Medicare.
Right. And there probably won't be.
No. No, not if things all continues to go. It's making people desperate. And they look at their entire world being destroyed, and they feel like that there's no option. Then you have things that happened.
I'm sorry, Agnes?
Yes.
I'm sorry. It sounded like you were fading out or something there.
It's just horrific that the American people would let the government go ahead and do what they're doing to the survivors from New Orleans.
Yeah. It truly is. And I think that what we're going to have to do, I mean, you know, first of all, the first thing we have to do, I mean, we have to get people in office that are going to hold this guy accountable. You know, I live in a Democratic district, thank God.
Yeah, I'm in a red state, so.
You know, and I am in too, but, you know, luckily I'm in one of those small liberal you know, like a liberal oasis, you know.
Right.
You know, being in North Carolina. But, you know, we've got to hold this guy accountable. And it amazes me, you know, how even in the middle of all the stuff that's going on this Justice Sunday thing that's coming up, you know, half of the speakers are African Americans, you know. And you know, what I've been trying to do is approach voters, you know, people, friends of mine, with the fact that what needs to happen is we need to have, you know, we need to convince people that instead of voting values, they need to vote for, you know, for personal benefit. You know what I'm saying?
Look.
I'm sorry. Say it again. Uh-oh, Agnes, I think it seems like we're having some trouble here. Can you hear me?
Okay. I'll talk to you later, Bruce.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye. I'm sorry about that, folks. apparently, we're having some problem with my phone box here. Bad phone box. Okay, maybe it'll work now. Agnes, thank you for calling. That was Agnes, who is out of West Virginia and is a producer for another wonderful show by a gentleman named Bob Kincaid. And Bob is fantastic with his show. He does it again. I've covered that. He's on the air 7 to 10 every weeknight, and does a fantastic job of taking apart the right wing you know. So anyway, thank you, Agnes, for calling it. You know, and it is, you know, what we're seeing is that this government does not care at all one iota about the things that are happening around, you know, our country, and with, you know, they are systematically disassembling, not dissembling, as the president said. They are disassembling a governmental institution that was set up many, many years ago under FDR and improved under some administration since then. But I firmly believe that it is a long-standing resentment against FDR that is making this particular administration work so heavily on dismantling, you know, the public assistance that there is available. Another very quick story, if you will. If you'd like to give us a call, we got about 6 minutes left. It is the telephone number is 336-856-2855. And
you know, you can give us a call or you can drop me an email. Matter of fact, maybe it's time for me to check that to see if anyone sent me an email. It would be really nice to get some email. Oh, great. Look, it's an email from the National Chocolate Survey. Congratulations, you've been selected to participate in our national, in our nationwide M&M's survey. Click here. I don't think so. Does anybody else get emails like that? I mean, I get them all the time. Walter Pincus, our friend at the Washington Post, says, the NSA gave other U.S. agencies information from surveillance. The NSA has turned such information over to the DIA, which is the Defense Intelligence Agency, and to other government entities, said apparently three current and former senior administration officials. I will never again see that phrase without thinking about Scooter Libby and Karl Rove for the rest of my life. Now, I'm only 36. But I will always think of those two when I hear senior administration officials. Information from intercepts, which typically includes records of telephone or email communications, would be made available by request to agencies that are allowed to have it, including the FBI, the DIA, the CIA, and the Department of Fatherland Security. My friend Blue, Blue and Mo in the chat room always tells me not to say Homeland Security, so I'm not. I'm going to say Fatherland Security, because it certainly is exactly what seems to be what the deal is with that. At any rate, we are about 4 minutes off to the top of the hour. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bruce Birch. I'm going to do our final little announcements for the evening. The first one is, here's the first announcement, and that is that I am really, 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 really grateful to have been over the past year, over the past 4 months anyway, able to bring you a radio program every Sunday night at 10 p.m. You know, and I've never, you know, I take that back. I have a couple times come out over the air and asked for donations. My friend, you know, this particular show was underwritten by Godbold Computer Services, and we will do underwriting if you want to, to get your name out there. You know, whatever business that you're doing, you know, we do accept underwriting. So please do, if you're considering giving a donation to All Things Reconsidered, you can go to allthingsreconsidered.org and click on the donate button all the way at the bottom on the left-hand side of the page. You'll see it, and it'll take you to a page that'll describe to you how to do that. This helps us to upgrade our equipment and do the things that we need to do to keep this show running. And every donation, well, you know what, it's not tax deductible, but it helps you sleep at night. So that's what matters. All Things Reconsidered itself, this was actually show number 23. It is archived by White Rose Society, and that you can get to there by going to whiterosesociety.org, and that is my friend Ben Birch, who is absolutely no relation to me, but you know what? I would claim him if he were, okay? He's a fantastic guy. He archives 5 million hours of liberal progressive talk radio over at whiterosesociety.org. And he has been a fantastic champion of this genre. So, we need to help support him as well. Please do so. If you feel like you need to, you know, if you're feeling generous, please send him a generous donation as well. And also my friend Bob Kincaid, whose wife was on a little while ago. Thank you, Bob, for all that you do to help support this program. And also to my friend down under, Mr. John Fox, thank you very much, sir, for everything that you've done to help support me in this endeavor. And it's now 12:58 by my clock, and that means that we're going to try to take this puppy home. And let's see here. All Things Reconsidered is broadcast every Sunday at 10 p.m. Stream details, go to allthingsreconsidered.org and Also, archives and podcasts there as well. This program was underwritten by God Bowl Computer Services. If you'd like to join us during the program, or any time of the day or night, please come to the Tom Hartman chat room at tomhartman.com. The finest minds on the internet gather there to listen to various progressive radio programming. Thank you to all who have listened, and if this was your first show, please join us next week. My name is Bruce Birch, and this has been All Things Reconsidered.